What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
I hope everyone's going to have a great weekend. We're going to watch some NFL this weekend. We'll get set for Monday night. I'm ready for Monday right now, man. I wish Ohio State and Notre Dame were playing tonight, but they're not. And if, I'll be honest with you, I'm glad they're not playing on a Friday night, because I was listening to Peterlin earlier in the week, and they were talking about the ratings for the national semifinal against Texas and how they seem to be down. And I was trying to remind him, and Jeff, I think you're on board with this too, that I mean, when you throw a game in on a Friday night, Friday's normally the you're just not going to get a casual TV viewer to pop in on a Friday night, because they're not watching TV. You know, I think that's what makes the numbers even more gigantic, is when you're getting casual, I kind of care fans, or, oh, is that what everyone else is doing tonight? They're watching the game. So on a Friday night, it's tough to get viewers as is, because it's Friday night. It's the lowest night of the week for ratings. And then Sunday is the big one. So you always want to be on Sunday night. So I think that was one of the reasons why ratings might have been a little bit down for Ohio State. You agree with that?
Okay.
Texas? Does that make sense? I mean, sure. You believe that too, that
yeah.
Fridays seem to be a down night.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I'd agree.
All right, Jeff, we need us a quarterback. It's up to you to find one for us.
Well, we have the guy who everybody seems to think is an easy solution for the Browns.
Baskin and Phelps present.
All right, so tell me again how this is not the same old Browns.
Let's find us a quarterback.
There's a guy in Atlanta who has been benched, who has a history with Kevin Stefanski, and who may or may not be toast. We're going to talk about Kirk Cousins today. Now, before I give you his story, two things jump out here. You ready?
Sure.
He's made the sixth most money of any player in NFL history.
And I say congratulations.
Already.
Yes.
And if after next year, he'll be the third highest paid player in the history of the National Football League.
That's amazing.
That is amazing, isn't it? That one to me is stunning. And good for him. Right now in his career, he has made, are you ready? $293 million. He trails, and counting upwards, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Matthew Stafford, and Aaron Rodgers. And next year, he's due to make $37.5 million between a roster bonus and a salary, and that'll jump him up behind Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. The other thing is, we always hear, hey, you know, well, he's Kevin Stefanski's guy, blah, 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 right?
Yeah, yes.
They actually only worked together for 2 years.
That's a long time in the NFL.
Two years in Minnesota. And here's the background real quick. Cousins will be 37 in August. He played this year coming back from a torn Achilles, was a fourth-round pick in Washington, as we know, sat for 3 years basically behind RG3, played some, but it was pretty sporadic, then was the starter in Washington for 3 years where he ended up getting paid, went to Minnesota for six, signed as a free agent, and then tore his Achilles after 8 games, and Atlanta signed him for a 4-year, $180 million contract, $100 million guaranteed for this last year, and then they benched him. And they probably benched him for pretty good reason. The way it's worked, and then he went to, when he was in Minnesota in 2018, his quarterback coach was Kevin Stefanski.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really good, 70% completion, 4,300 yards, 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. And they went 8-7-1. The next year, Kevin was his offensive coordinator in Minnesota. Big numbers again, 26 touchdowns, only 6 interceptions. He went to the Pro Bowl, and the Vikings went 10-5 in his 15 starts, and then Kevin came to the Browns. So they had 2 successful years together. Another thing that jumped out to me about Kirk Cousins, this one might surprise you a little bit. As a starter, he's been a starter for basically 10 seasons.
I know where you're going with this one.
5 winning records,
yep.
2 losing records, 3 500 records. But it's this. He's been within 2 games of 500 in 8 of his 10 seasons. So in other words, He's been okay. Can I do a Menigan?
Yeah.
That's what he's been. His best record was 13-4 in 2022 and then 10-5 in 2019. Other than that, he went 9-7 and 8-7-1 twice. So Kirk Cousins probably isn't the guy who's going to come in and, hey, all of a sudden we're 15-2. But he might be the guy who can get you to 10-7 and get you into the playoffs. I think that's kind of interesting. Now, he went to Atlanta this year. This is where this one gets sticky to me.
Okay.
And we're going to have Orlando Ledbetter join us from the Atlanta Constitution coming up at 11:20. And he can give us some real insight as to, is he good or is he toast? In the first nine games this year in Atlanta, Falcons were good. They were 6-3. Mm-hmm. And Cousins was the starting quarterback. And in the first nine games, had 17 touchdowns, only 6 interceptions. He was sacked a lot, which, you know, guy coming back from an Achilles, you might understand that. He was sacked 17 times. But in the first nine games, they were 6-3 and averaged 24.6 points per game. In his last five games, his last five starts, one touchdown and 9 interceptions.
Yeah, that number kind of jumps out.
Yep, and he was sacked 11 times. The Falcons went 1-4 in those last five games, and their scoring from the first nine at 24.6 dropped to 14.4. And Raheem Morris and the guys in Atlanta had seen enough, and they benched him and decided to start Michael Penix. It was a bad situation because they brought in Cousins, who they thought, hey, great, you know, he's going to be our starter for a while. And Cousins thought, I'm going to be your starter for 4 years.
Right.
And my wife's family lives here now. This is going to be great. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they draft Penix. Cousins said, you know, Atlanta, you know.
He said Minnesota would never do this to me.
Minnesota never lied to me like Atlanta did.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. So it sounds precarious from before he ever even takes the field. Then he's really good for nine games. And then he's really bad for five games. And now they're going to get rid of him. Maybe. Here's the catch. How can the Falcons move on from Kirk Cousins? There are a number of ways.
Okay.
Anybody who wants to trade for him, and I've seen trade scenarios out there. One had the Browns as one of five teams willing to trade for him, and they said it would take something like Juan Thornhill and a fourth-round pick.
It's been nice to see him.
And with everybody, the guy who wrote this story put together a defensive starter and a fourth-round pick. So, but if you want to trade for him, it'll cost you $37.5 million because he's guaranteed $27.5 million for his salary next year and a $10 million roster bonus for 2026 if he's on the roster by March 17th. So if the Browns wanted to trade for him, Andy, $37.5 million. And
can they push some of that down the road to help themselves out? I don't know. This is where I get really confused on the contract stuff.
I don't know.
Would they have to figure out a way to push
stuff
down the road?
They could probably renegotiate because most of the money that he's already been given by the Falcons, you know, that he was guaranteed $100 million, he's already got most of it. He got $50 million up front.
Oh, well.
When he went to Atlanta. And then he got like a $12.5 million salary. So $62.5 million of the $100 million guaranteed is already there. The other is coming up. Here's the other thing. He has a no-trade clause. So even if you want to trade for him, he can go, nah, I'm good.
So doesn't that...
And the Falcons would have to pay him.
Right, but to get him here, it would be based on his relationship with Kevin, don't you think? That's how you get him to leave Atlanta, especially when you say things, and I think you value this big time, that if his wife's family's from Atlanta... And he thought this
is going to be great. I can retire and be here with the in-laws.
Right.
Yeah, that could be interesting. So what does this scream? It screams Cousins wants them to release him. Because if they release him, then they're going to have to pay him like the Broncos had to pay Russell Wilson. And then he can go pick where he wants to go and sign for next to nothing like Russell Wilson did in Pittsburgh, thus allowing his team to have a starting quarterback on the cheap and spend money elsewhere while your quarterback still gets paid. That's what this could be. And that's what he wants. at least according to what everybody says.
I mean, that sounds like a very good scenario for the current condition our franchise is in.
Except
right now.
For this.
How can there be an except for on this? Keep going.
Except for this. Do you think he can still play?
Yeah.
That's what this gets back to.
Here's what
I think. Can he still play, or did he just... Is he shot?
Do you think the thing that concerns me the most is the 16 interceptions this year? Because I feel like we've gone down this road now 2 years in a row, except Flacco was able to do it and win, and but Winston wasn't.
True.
So what I would have.
And in the last five games, one touchdown, 9 interceptions, 11 sacks. And 14.4 points per game.
That's
what I want to talk to Orlando about is, okay, was that an aberration or is this guy toast?
Yeah, I think that Kevin, you know, if he's coming here, it's because of his relationship with Kevin.
Do you really think that?
Yes,
okay.
I do. Why would he, I mean, if he could
Why else? Because this would give him an opportunity to show everybody that he can still play.
Again, and the Browns can give him that opportunity maybe better than other teams
Well,
can.
The Raiders could. The Steelers could,
yeah,
if they move on from Wilson and Fields.
If you're trying to rehab,
the Titans could, but they have the number one pick.
If you're trying to rehab, wouldn't you want to go somewhere where you could be comfortable? And Kevin probably could give him the option of being comfortable. And Kevin has shown success in this situation with Joe Flacco here.
I agree. Kevin is there is something there. But remember, he's only been with Kevin for 2 of his 13 seasons in the National Football League.
That's all it takes, man.
That might be true.
And those years were which years?
That might
it?
Be true. 2018, when Kevin was the Vikings quarterback coach and Cousins completed 70% of his passes.
Right.
And 2019, when he was the offensive coordinator. Under Kevin, he threw 56 touchdown passes and only 16 interceptions.
I mean, he started
in 2 years.
He started 31 games there and had 18 wins. I'll take it. I take a flyer on this, especially if it doesn't cost you a whole lot. If you've got Atlanta footing the bill on this. And you can also draft somebody that you can have ready, and there's no hurry to get him on the field.
He could be the perfect solution if he can still play, because in theory he won't cost you much, and he's old, and you'd bring in somebody else to develop.
Orlando Ledbetter, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He'll join us next to talk about what we're talking about here, plus Brian Anderson at High Noon, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. And then we're sitting here talking about Kirk Cousins. So I can't think of a better time to talk to D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Man, have you been inundated by Buckeye fans yet? Because when they come into a town, they take it over. So does Notre Dame, though, too. So any inundation in Atlanta's such a big town, though. I can't see it. Although Phoenix has been taking over. But what's the mood like down there?
Yeah, big time Buckeye vibe. You know, I'm a Cleveland guy, St. Chanel grad and all. But so yeah, all my Northeastern Ohio folks are hitting me up too. So yeah, the phone's been jumping, and the town will be jumping at the College Football Hall of Fame. Everybody's getting ready for the big weekend.
Nice. Did you play football at Chanel or no?
I played at Cathedral Latin.
Oh, you played at Latin.
And I graduated from Chanel when Latin closed. I played football, basketball, baseball at Latin.
Nice.
So, in other words, Orlando, you closed down high schools.
yeah, basically. Both of them are gone now.
All right. Your hometown team apparently needs a quarterback for next year. And we're going over a bunch of guys. We're picking a guy every day or so and talking about a guy. Today's guy was Kirk Cousins, and Dan said, well, we got to get Orlando on the phone to talk about it. And Kirk gets mentioned with the Browns all the time because of the 2 years he spent with Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota. The big question I have before we get into some minute stuff, is he toast? Because the last 5 games he started there, he was terrible. The first 9 games he started in Atlanta, he was pretty good. Where is he?
Yeah, I think, he dazzled, fell off the cliff. I think he was hurt, and they won't admit it. So, you know, best case scenario for him is he gets healthy. Nothing's wrong with his elbow and shoulder, which he appeared on a report this year. And his Achilles is revived. We know that takes more than 1 year. Then maybe the Browns could get a year or two out of him. You still got to get a young guy to learn under kind of what they did here. But, yeah, you know, with them. If they have to cut him and you get him cheap, I wouldn't trade a lot for him, but certainly he knows Kevin's operation and could definitely run it. But so, yeah, it makes sense on certain levels.
As a guy that grew up here, does it work? That's my question for you. Like, when the notion comes up and you start thinking, well, what would Kirk look like in a Browns uniform and how would he play with Kevin? Just personally, do you think that would work here?
Yeah, I think it would work, but I don't know if it's more than the Flacco thing, though. You know, if it's a year or
right.
2 years max. Yeah, you know, it's a stopgap measure at the best. Kevin tried to save his job. But you know, if I got a plan where he's in there, he's teaching the young guy, then, you know, then that would be a real plan.
Orlando, if you thought he was hurt, that means you would probably think he was healthy in the first nine games? How did he
did he
play in those nine games? What did he look like to you?
Yeah, the first game was, first game back from Achilles was pretty shaky. Then he got hot. Went to Philly and beat the Eagles. They had Kansas City on the ropes, threw for 509. His October was just amazing. He was moving the ball around, hitting the open guy, hitting guys on the move. It was pretty awesome display of a quarterback in there. And then in the New Orleans, we got tatted up a little bit. He sacks, got three sacks, nine hits, and he just wasn't the same after all those hits he took down in New Orleans. And just kind of, you know, the ball was coming out late. It was coming out slow. He was floating the ball. So, yeah, I think, you know, if he wasn't healthy, then something was certainly wrong with how he was reading defenses and so forth after that Saints game.
You know, he's got a no trade, right? So he'd have to say yes to Cleveland. Do you think he would say yes to Cleveland?
Yeah, I think he absolutely would say yes to Cleveland. And, you know, I haven't talked to him or Mike McCartney on a record about this. Cleveland, I saw Geno maybe come to Cleveland. The Giants might be interested in Kurt. Yeah, but Cleveland would be very high on his list, I would imagine.
Do you think a team should trade for him? Or because he has that no trade, is he going to have the leverage to make the Falcons cut him, pay him like Denver had to pay Russ Wilson, and then he can pick where he's going to go, Orlando?
Yeah, one of my agent friends, a former high league executive, said that contract's untradeable and that, you know, they could just sit and wait for him to come on the market like Russell Wilson did. So if you trade them, what are you giving? You know, I wouldn't give up too many assets for him and, you know, gamble that he's going to come on the open market and he's going to want to come to you. The other teams might leapfrog you, though, you know, veteran quarterback, you know, and come together with the package, but then Kurt can block the package. So Kurt and his agent have been the NFL business side of it, they have been way ahead of a lot of people.
Orlando Ledbetter joining us from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Cleveland guy looking out for his hometown team, which we appreciate. Tell me this. Who do you think has more leverage? Is it Kirk Cousins with the no-trade clause where he can say, hey, Atlanta, cut me? Or would it be the Falcons who say, you know, we're not going to cut you. You can sit here and watch Michael Penix play quarterback, and we will pay you, and you can just sit here and rot.
Yeah, the Falcons could do that, but Coach Raheem Morris is good friends with Coach Tomlin, and I think he has a no hostage rule. Also, he wouldn't want the hostage on board of the plane if that's the case. So, I would think that would not be a plausible. That's the situation they're trying to sell to everybody to up his trade value. But they have said he's their backup quarterback moving forward until otherwise. But I think that's posturing at its grandest level.
So, Orlando, most likely scenario for you, somebody trades for Cousins, he gets released by Atlanta and signs somewhere else, or he sits there and is the backup for the Falcons. What's the most likely to you?
The most likely one is him getting cut on March the 12th and, you know, signing with the team of his choice.
And what team might that be? If you can see the perfect fit for him, would it be the Browns?
It would definitely be the Browns. You know, him and Kevin and their time in Minnesota, he speaks fondly of him. Only Kevin O'Connell will have a better shot.
All right, let me get the big story in Atlanta. Obviously, the national championship up on Monday night. Your thoughts on Ohio State, Notre Dame, and what's the in Orlando? Sorry, in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's kind of everybody's excited about the championship game. They've seen the Buckeyes here in the Final Four a couple years ago. Do go to war with Georgia, but for the spearing hit on Harrison, the Buckeyes probably have a national title there. But, the buzz is, it's college football is king down here, whether it's the Midwest or the South, where it's just supposed to mean more. But, the two big heavyweights coming into town, folks are fired up about it, and they're going to be showing off the Southern hospitality to welcome the Notre Dame and the Buckeye folks to the South.
What does it mean to a city to be able to host, not each bowl, but a national championship? Because obviously you know what's getting kicked around here in Cleveland with a dome. And to have the ability to host multiple events like this, I think it's got to be just a huge shot in the arm for the city.
Yeah, it really is. And I got to see it firsthand as a fan, not so much as covering it. Because, the SEC championship's here every year. But I got to hang out with my Ohio State folks and tailgate and hang out at the suites, and I had a great old time last time before that Georgia game. So it has to mean a lot to the city and the community. We got the restaurants and the footprint to make it work. Everything's walkable downtown and a lot of hotel rooms and stuff. So yeah, it's a good time, and it's a good time of the year too, where it's not snowy and cold and stuff.
Hanging out in the suites. You know people. Nice.
Yeah, you must. We're going to start hanging out with you when we come down there.
Hey, no problem. Give me a call.
With Ryan Day as head coach at Ohio State, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think it started with Urban Meyer, it would appear that Ohio State, maybe some other northern schools, are kind of trying to emulate SEC-style football. You think that's accurate, Orlando? And was it necessary if it is accurate?
Yeah, I would go back to when I covered the Buckeyes and John Cooper got there from Tennessee. He was a Tennessee guy. And he's like, hey, the SEC coaches are getting paid more than my coaches. We got to step our game up. He got rolling there a little bit, but couldn't win, the Michigan game and so forth. So, I think it started way before these guys got there and trying to catch up to the perimeter speed of the game. We always had our big...
Lose him? Ah, Orlando, we lost you.
And we learned a couple lessons in the Florida title game. And it's just been that whole process of being able to match up with the speed of the SEC.
Outstanding. Hey, Orlando, we love talking. We'd love to have you back on. And anybody you need to give a shout-out back home?
Yeah, my boy Don Boggs, old St. Ignatius shooting guard. That's my main guy in Cleveland, and he always holds it down for me when I get back home.
Outstanding. All right. Oh, good. Go ahead,
Joe. Last thought, Kirk Cousins ends up not in Atlanta, but somewhere else next year. That's your thought, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think you just have a $40 million backup sitting around stewing.
Good point. All right, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Orlando.
All right, Andy and Jeff. Take care. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. D. Orlando Ledbetter. Killing it. All right, so the story again. It appears the Blue Jays have acquired Miles Straw from the Guardians. The Guardians will receive a player to be named later or cash in return. That's coming from MLB trade rumors. What was the other stuff? There was no other information, was there? Did I miss anything else on that?
I mean, the Guards are also going to send international bonus money to the Blue Jays as well, which does nothing for anybody who is living here. But if you are a fan of the Blue Jays, it pretty much screams they are loading up to make an offer for Roki Sasaki.
Yes.
Who is the hot Japanese pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Who came out as an amateur, so therefore can only sign for the amateur cash as a minor leaguer and cannot sign as a major leaguer.
Can't sign a great big contract.
Exactly. Yep.
And folks in Japan weren't happy that he came over.
Right. All right. So ends the Miles Straw era here in Cleveland.
If you're Miles Straw, aren't you like doing the Baskin sigh of relief and saying, thank you, I'm getting out of here. And not because he didn't like it here, but because obviously the team moved on from him.
Yeah, although Didn't they bring him back during the playoffs or right before the playoffs?
Yeah, so he could sit and watch.
Okay, well, I don't think
he spent the year playing for Columbus.
Yeah, it was a difficult choice for the Guardians to walk away from him on that, right? I mean, they had to make a decision.
You mean now to walk away?
No, then beginning of the season. I mean, he was an investment.
Yeah,
they paid him defensively. He's a major leaguer. It's being at the plate where he struggles.
Let me throw something at you.
Sure. We're going to get back to this quarterback talk here.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. I can't wait. They
it was your idea.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, we just had a trade.
I know.
My guess is we're going to talk quarterback a little bit longer coming up in the next month or two. Yes, I know. But I just have one point here.
Okay.
Miles came over from Houston, had one pretty good offensive year, and they signed him to a multi-year contract, thinking, okay, the guy can hit. Then he couldn't hit. They also signed another Toronto Blue Jay now after he came over from the Mets, played really good defense, had one pretty good offensive year. Boom. Here's Andrés Giménez with a nice, great, big, long contract that really doesn't kick in financially until now moving forward. Have they missed? Did they miss twice on guys who were pretty good defensively? And they thought, okay, yep, he's going to hit enough that he's worth that contract because they've traded both of them to Toronto.
First of all, they have 10,000 middle infielders that can either play the position at shortstop or second base, or they just turn them into an outfielder. Isn't that how it works? So I think that they
oh, somebody else.
Well, no, I'm just saying that they – is there a problem with an organization wanting to believe in their own depth and that they're going to go out and draft somebody and put themselves in a position to give them the opportunity to play, and that maybe you need to – at some point, you got to walk away. That's what this organization has done for 30 years, and they've had success. And at some point, you may have to give up someone who might have a little bit left to give another team so you can get something back, knowing that the guys that are coming up from the minors can be the future.
That's great. Or did you miss on two guys who you thought would hit?
I can't sit here and say that – They missed on the contract with Strong.
Exactly. There's right.
It's the contract miss. I don't know that it's a player miss, because if you can replace them with someone who's better, did you really miss? Or were you able to believe in your own organization to make guys that you thought could be talented into major leaguers, and then they show their talent at the major league level?
My only thought is, does it make them hesitant to move forward, maybe giving long-term contracts to guys based on a shorter sample size offensively?
The Miles Straw contract was all of 5 years for $25 million a year. We're talking $5 million bucks.
Yeah, I know, except they still gave it to him. And as an organization that doesn't like to get tied to long-term contracts, especially for guys who don't produce.
But
it's a very different contract than Giménez, but the scenario is the same.
In the beginning,
a guy who hit well once.
Okay, I know you're putting your arms up, and I think you're looking at
it. He hit 285 for the Indians, and they thought, hey, we got a guy who can hit and help. And they gave him the contract, and he didn't hit. Andrés, who I love, hit and then didn't really grow as a hitter.
The point isn't about the money. It's
not
about
at all.
The investment.
Thank you, Andy.
It's the investment.
It's the fact that they decided to invest in two guys who they thought were really great gloves, and they both are gold gloves.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both great, but the offense wasn't there, and they moved on from both guys.
This is like comparing apples and...
No, you're
looking... No. Let me finish the analogy. Please. Give me a little bit. And a fruit that I can't think of right now that's relatively similar to apples in that way, but is similar but not the same.
A pear.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it. I couldn't think of one.
Yeah,
because the difference in the two of those guys was that Miles Straw was a five-year deal for $25 million.
Take the money out
of
it.
No, but the money is a part of it. Because $5 million a year, not with my point,
it's not a part of it.
But it is.
No, not with my point. My point is this. They signed a guy because he was a great defender who had one good offensive year, and they locked him up. And they did it twice. My only point is this. Are they not judging guys properly? That's my only point. Forget the money. It costs you more to sign Giménez because he's better. But my point is this. You signed a guy who you know is a gold glove guy, and you thought he'd hit well enough, and they didn't hit well enough. Forget the money. It's the same. It's the exact same signing, but for very different contracts.
But if I could walk up to Juan Brito right now, or if I could walk up to to Brian Rocchio, or if I could walk up to, I don't know, pick your poison of somebody that you really like on this ball club and offer them $5 million for a 5-year deal for $25 million, you would do it to all of those guys. Like, that's not a move that should cripple an organization or make you look at that organization and think to themselves, oh, they're investing in the wrong places. No, they're not. It's $5 million on a for 5 years.
Either,
like, that's why I look at it and I'm like, this is apples and pears.
Either you're missing my point or you don't care to look at it. So
I think I'm missing your point.
His point is more about the investment. Like, I totally
my point is about the evaluation.
Evaluation and investment based on the investment based on the evaluation.
That's correct.
That's what he's talking about. Like, again, and
they decided to lock themselves into a 5-year contract on Miles Straw based on the fact that he hit .285 for him 1 year.
Yeah, that's it. That they're, and if it doesn't work out, that, you know,
it wasn't much of a hit, but you locked into that, and they probably played him longer than they should have before they bit the bullet and sent him to AAA.
Right,
which is extremely difficult for an organization that runs
that watches its money.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's my point.
They don't want to make mistakes. They don't want to Nick Swisher again.
And they got rid.
I think.
And they got rid of Andres. First of all, you draft a guy number one who's a second baseman. And then you get rid of him before the big money kicks in.
Because
maybe you signed a guy who you thought might continue to hit fairly well, and it just didn't progress. And I love Andrés Giménez. I think he's a tremendous baseball player. But truly, the bat wasn't there.
But they're also willing to maybe look at something where it might go against fan sentiment, where you look at Josh Naylor against Carlos Santana, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. Like, that money didn't – that's not an atypical – Guardians move.
You spent more on the guy you're bringing in who's almost 40.
Yeah.
Than on the guy you traded away for next to nothing who's coming off 31 homers and 100 RBIs.
Yeah, so like, how do you explain that? Again, I know this doesn't have anything to do with what you're talking about before, but it's quirky because they're clearly the most consistent team in town when it comes to managing what they're doing
and their approach, from a business standpoint. Yeah.
And if you can weigh things out as having success during the season by making the playoffs, they're an unbelievable successful organization. And this kind of goes against the grain. Both do. Like, I'm serious that Chris is probably pulling hairs out of his head that they gave Miles Straw that deal in the first place and then kind of had to walk it back and then had to send him to the minors. Because I just don't think that's what no one would have that intention.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, but boy, if you're panicking over that one,
it's not the money, Dan. But it's the evaluation.
But the problem is that they go hand in hand. Like, by giving him that contract, it wasn't saying we think this guy is a future cornerstone. It's saying we think this guy can play, and we think this is somebody that can help our team. And
they were wrong.
And when you were wrong, okay, fine. But it's not like
you landed on a pillow. I was talking about was the evaluation.
Right.
All right, you took it to money. That's okay.
But to me, that goes hand in hand. And maybe that's my misinterpretation, and I apologize for that.
To me, it's that they've evaluated two guys with great gloves as guys who might be able to help them offensively, and they decided to move on from both.
And here's the other part of it, too, is that if this seems nitpicky for teams that are willing to just walk away from guys that they gave them more money than they probably should have, it probably is, but it's the reason the organization is successful is because they don't miss. Yeah, they just don't, and that's why we both see this.
But
and
boy, if you're looking at it on that knife's edge... I mean, good God.
That's how they do their business.
Oh, I know. But boy, you are just putting yourself in a perpetual state of struggle. If that's the knife's edge, you're going to bounce on.
But they don't because they don't make the mistake.
And they moved on. And they moved on from both. Give them credit for that.
Yeah.
They moved on from both.
Right. And again, I'll go back in history and just say, the aggravation from, you know, Swisher and Bourne. And, like, they didn't want to find themselves in those positions. And this is all Bourne. And I think Jeff and I both have a bigger picture on this because, we're talking from the 90s forward. The consistency in the organization, if you can just open your eyes and see how successful they've been, is because things like this are not
rare,
of the norm.
Rare.
They're not rare. The norm. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So the Santana one.
Okay.
If you want to go that direction. All right, this is one of those where prepare your raspberry noise accordingly, start snoring as you see fit.
Okay.
if you go by advanced metrics, you go by wins above replacement, you go by the lot, Carlos Santana is a better player than Josh Naylor. Okay.
Oh, over the course of time, I would say yes.
Over the course of an entire season, yes. The numbers would bear that out.
Last year he wasn't, although he won a gold glove.
But again, it depends. If you are looking at the advanced analytics and all that stuff, they would come back and tell you that Carlos Santana was a better player last year than Josh Naylor was.
Okay.
Yes.
That's great.
So if you look at it from, I want somebody who is as consistent as they come, is going to play 150 games in a season, is going to play gold glove level first base, is going to have a 330 on base, is going to slug over 450.
May not eventually break down because he weighs more closer to 270 than he does to the listed 255.
And be able to hit 22 bombs, and you could pretty much put that like clockwork, then Carlos Santana is your guy.
Although at some point, doesn't the bottom fall out of that because he's pushing 40?
You would think, hence the reason they only handed him a one-year deal.
Yep.
But clearly that's how they looked at it, is they went, we can be better by having Carlos Santana here than we were with Josh Naylor. I know if you go look at the counting stats and you go look at RBI and you look at home runs and you look at all that stuff, you're going to go, what the hell is he talking about? But if you look at all the analytics and the advanced metrics and all of that kind of stuff and your VORPs and WARPs and whatever else you want to point to, Carlos Santana is a better player than Josh Naylor.
You know what I have to say?
You don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the swapping out Santana for Naylor either. I don't have any problem with it. Do you?
I would have kept Josh for the year as long as you're going to – if you're paying Santana for 1 year, I would have kept Josh for 1 year and paid him the $9.3 million instead of the $12 you're paying Carlos. And see maybe if he sticks around or maybe if it works. I know Chris Antonetti said the shape factor was not any concern for them. He said maybe it was for somebody else. You should ask them. I'd be stunned if that were actually the case. I would think they were concerned. I would have been. And if they weren't, they should have been. By the way, let me throw in one other thought. It's mid-January and we were just talking baseball.
Warms my heart.
Isn't that great?
All right, well, I'll make you even happier. Brian Anderson, super friend of the show. You know him and love him. He's next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.